people are going to make fun of me if it doesn't work and if he turns into the French Cameron Payne. I just go Killian Hayes. That's my favorite player I've seen.
And then he turns around and calls him the French Cameron Payne. Wow.
That's it. The Milwaukee Bucks lose. The best team in the NBA is gone. And the Miami Heat going to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time in 6 years.
Welcome to the House of Strauss on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Stars hang with stars, winners hang with winners.
Popcorn and LaCroix. That's the breakfast of champions right there.
Breakfast of champions when you don't have time to make a proper breakfast, but that's okay because welcome to the House of Strauss. Ladies and gentlemen, we are joined by the inimitable. I can't say inimitable. Is that the way to say it? I don't know. Guy who's good at broadcasting, Amin El-Hassan. Amin El-Hassan, everybody.
You can't imitate him.
Not to be imitated. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm just plugging along as we continue on this weird world where the NBA playoffs are coinciding with my kids in school, and so I'm not home at all. As they, you know, they're wondering where I'm at, but you know, I guess this is what everybody's going through.
You know, everything's upside down. Everything's topsy turvy. As I record this and look outside in the morning, it is dark outside because some interaction between the massive fires and the weather has inverted daytime and nighttime. But certain things you can trust on, certain things you can count on, folks, such as Amin El-Hassan being correct about a prediction. This is your victory lap, Amin. That's what this episode is. This is your chance because we had this conversation about the Bucks and with Nate Duncan on the podcast, and you've made your case. You've been making your case on Twitter. The Bucks have lost. They have been upset by the Miami Heat. Take your victory lap. Explain how you did this. Bask in whatever sound effects Jade is going to throw at this from behind the scenes. Tell me about it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because this wasn't, unlike many of the other people I see who kind of were on this train. My originating station was not Orlando in the bubble. My originating station was like in February or March as I was looking at the Eastern Conference playoff picture. And it says it really looks like Miami is going to be locked in either the 4 or the 5 seed, which means they have a date with the Bucks in the second round. And I going back to last year, not the Raptors series, but the Celtics series, I felt like the Bucks were an immensely talented yet immensely flawed team. I compared them to the Death Star, right? This massive technological terror that destroys entire planets, and how can we ever stop it? And it turns out there's this little exhaust vent that's 2 meters wide, and if you drop a proton bomb down it, boom, the whole thing explodes.
You're all clear, kid. Now let's blow this thing and go home.
Right? So, like, a bigger, stronger fleet could not take down this thing, but a little single-man fighter can.
I just want to interject and say I like how the metaphor has to be Star Wars and not the obvious Achilles heel metaphor that we've had for thousands of years. But
no,
go on.
No, that doesn't make sense because like Giannis is Greek and I don't want to use too much Greek. I got to go somewhere else with this tragedy. So I sat back last year and I said, if you're a team that moves the ball and shoots threes, right? That isn't a predictable kind of offense and obviously has elite three-point shooting, you can beat the Bucks. The defensive game plan was a lot more obvious. Everybody knows it. It's build a wall on Giannis and dare those guys to beat you from the outside, which, of course, that worked to great success for Miami. It's a lot easier to say that than to execute it, but Miami, again, uniquely equipped. You talk about four dudes between 6'7 and 6'9 and Andre Iguodala, Jimmy Butler, Jay Crowder, and Bam Adebayo, who are long, strong, fast, smart. So won't fall for a lot of Giannis's stuff. Strong hands. We're stripping. We're very active and smothering, and we're quick enough to move. So taking away many of his natural gifts that he has, usually when he's playing against these teams. So I combined all that and I said, yeah, I don't even think it's going to be a close series. I saw people taking Heat in seven. Sedano, Joe Sedano, my buddy, took Heat in seven. I sent him a text that said six with an asterisk, right? I said, this ain't going to be a nail biter, or it just came down to it. They're going to beat them convincingly. Obviously, Giannis's injury assists in that and then gets him down to five, or perhaps should have even been four. But the reality is, I never for one moment thought that Milwaukee was going to win this series.
Yeah. And I want to say to any Bucks fans listening that we will circle back to the positive bit of Bucks news that has come out of this, Giannis' declaration. But for now, we're going to fixate on what went wrong. We will circle back. I think we do need some
Is that
balance.
Positive news?
I think so. Okay, we'll get to that. We'll tease that. We will tease that right there. Yeah, I never made any kind of predictions. I said on a few podcasts that I didn't think the Bucks were a championship team. I didn't believe the analytics. I didn't believe the net rating with them.
Explain why. Because I'm with you, but explain why you didn't believe the analytics or the net rating.
Well, some of it was the defensive side that you fixated on more so, that they gave up a lot of threes. Although in theory, you can tweak your scheme. But I just don't think – I never thought they had the roster. They didn't have the roster. They didn't have the second option who could create his own shots. And I think that we need to perhaps adjust some of our view going into the playoffs. I keep saying we keep looking at it as though you can just spend your regular season net rating like it's a down payment on the house and just go, okay, this gets me to the finals right here. I've come in with more net rating than this other team. And if we are in a world where the regular season matters less and less and less, maybe we should learn that lesson and start thinking about this more schematically, as you were doing with this particular series, and in terms of matchups, than this. They crushed it in the regular season. They just don't seem to have the talent to get the job done. Am I wrong?
I wouldn't say. I don't think it's the talent. I don't think it's talent based. I think they're talented enough to win. I think this was just a terrible matchup for them, but. What I would say is that analytics can make us smarter and it can make us dumber, right?
Yes.
The analytics is never wrong. The numbers aren't wrong, but how you interpret the numbers is as much of an art form as the eye test, right? How you interpret numbers. So great example, let's talk about the net rating, right? Milwaukee, number one defense in all the land. Okay, but what does that mean? It means the reason why people bring it up is because we have a very important stat or a very important factoid. It's not even a stat. It's a factoid that of the last zillion champions, all of them have been top 10 in offense and defense, right? With the exception, I believe, of the 2001 Lakers and maybe the 2016 Cavs.
Yeah.
So because of this correlation, people are leaping to causation. If you have a top 10 offense and defense, or even better, a top 5, or in the case of the Bucks, a top 3 offense and top 3 defense, boom, you got it made. You are the elite of what we've already established as the elites. But you don't ever ask why or how these numbers were achieved. The numbers were achieved, first of all, there's a shit ton of shitty teams that you beat up on to get that net rating, right? To get that nice, fat offensive rating, to get that stingy defensive rating. Then the next level of that is, there's a bunch of good teams that you beat to beef up that rating, but had 24 to 48 hours to prep for you and had one coach, one assistant, one video coordinator, and one advanced scout game planning for you. And when we got done with the game, we threw it in a file cabinet, a proverbial file cabinet, and we moved on to the next one. And that's not what the playoffs are.
Yeah.
The playoffs are, we're all thinking about you. And especially in a bubble where I'm going back to my room, I don't have that much else to do. I'm thinking about you some more. And so we are creating all of these plans and all of these things that counteract the stuff that you did to get that nice, juicy net rating. And so not to say that the regular season is irrelevant,
But to treat it as the end-all, be-all is ridiculous. To me, it's a prereq. It's not a down payment, right?
Yeah.
In the sense that, yeah, if you're terrible at those things, yeah, you're not going to win a championship. Forget about it. If you're 15th in offense and 20th in defense, this ain't for you. But just because you're top five or one even in both of those categories, that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Yeah, it reminds me of Summer League, where being good doesn't necessarily guarantee you anything, but being bad is a major red flag if you're not competing at that level at all in the Summer League setting. And yeah, I think that is the way to look at it. And in most cases, to be clear, the teams with the great net ratings will be the most formidable playoff teams. That will be the case, obviously. But I just think sometimes it requires a deeper analysis, and the Bucks are a team I give a lot of credit to. They're a joy to watch. They're enjoyable and whatnot. But they did run into A, the perfect matchup, and B, I do wonder if this particular thing is something that is going to spread. Is it unique to the Heat? I wrote about how Bam is – I'm trying to make fetch happen here, by the way, and coined a term that is never going to work. But is he this new breed of Forve that Draymond Green also was, of undersized center who has the versatility to kind of play make from the outside and the exterior, not quite a traditional big, power forward size, but you play him at the five and you just crush. And they were crushing Miami Heat was when it was Bam at the five surrounded by guards, right? And more so than when he was flanked by a stretch five. And that's the way the league is heading, is that something that's particular that the Bucks really struggle with, or is that something that you're just going to see that for a lot of different teams, and maybe Giannis could be that, and maybe that will open up new doors? You know, did we see in this playoff series perhaps a preview of where the league is headed?
Well, I mean, you know, I was going to vehemently disagree with you. Then I thought to myself,
so you agree that Forve is a good term? Okay, check and check.
No. the idea that I thought to myself, how many times we've had conversations and I've said to you, yeah, no, that's, everybody knows this. And then I realized later that nobody knew it. Nobody saw it. Or at least it wasn't widely seen the way I thought it was. I think, yeah, like what Bam is, what Draymond is, what Boris Diaw was once upon a time, like that's where it started. And now we're seeing more and more. If you look at Jokic, if you look at
I would put Jokic in more the model of a traditional five who shoots threes and can just do amazing passing.
But the difference is, like, he's bringing the ball up the court.
Yeah.
Right? And he's initiating offense. It's not get me the ball and then I'll initiate offense, which is typically how good passing centers, Bill Walton, Arvydas Sabonis, Vlade, Shaq.
I guess I'm defining it as for the term – I need you to be able to guard forwards. You know, you're not only this undersized, fast center. Yeah.
Sure. And, okay. So if you want to go the defensive side as well, that's a fair talk as well. Okay. Yeah. You know, I'm with that. I'm okay with that. But the point being is that this proliferation of a big who offensively is your play initiator and play creator, and defensively gives you no liabilities, right? That's the new unicorn, right? The unicorn used to be, what's a guy who at rim protects and also shoot threes? It's the reason why I coined the term unicorn for Porzingis in the draft. And then everyone credited Kevin Durant, who said it like months later. But that's another story for another time. Now those guys are everywhere, right? Now we got a lot more of those guys. I should say they're everywhere, but we have a lot more of that type of player. Rim protector defensively, on the other end, he's shooting threes. So what's the next evolution is? I don't want you to be a bystander or a spacer in the offense. I want you to be the focal point of the offense, right? And defensively, I don't want you to be a last resort. I want you to be someone at the point of impact, right there, first line. And that's what Bam is, right? And that's what Draymond is. And I think you're going to see players developed into that. You know, Montrezl Harrell isn't quite there on either end of the floor, but you see the very kind of like kindergarten crayon version of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, it's an interesting one because we've asked these bigs to shoot threes, these lumbering bigs, these seven-footers, and oh my God, it's going to be such an advantage. Brook Lopez, get out there, bomb it from 30 feet. But the issue is that the way to guard that is not with a Brook Lopez, it's with a Bam Adebayo, you know? And so in a weird way, the bigs, by kind of getting with the times, are still part of this marginalization process for themselves. Of they're still kind of accepting terms that are favoring a different kind of player to take over. And obviously it's better to be big, all things being equal, but in the game of trade-offs with the way the NBA is going, where speed perhaps is taking more precedence over size, it seems like the Bam, the Draymond, that's the model. And yeah, those guys don't grow on trees, but maybe, as you're saying, you can develop more and more of them. I'm certainly thinking about it when I look at the draft. And beyond that, I'm starting to wonder if bigs are so cheap relative to the other positions because wings are so in demand, maybe you want to have a situation, since we're focusing on speed and energy and we're swarming, maybe you want to have a situation where you have two of these guys, where you're just, you know, both guys play in the 20-minute range, and you're just coming at the other team in waves in this way. I would analogize it to how you have two catchers in baseball or in football, you have two running backs, and that's the way it's going. Might that be the next evolution in how this is all headed?
I mean, maybe. I think what we've proven so far, it's hard enough to get one of those guys. Right. Mm-hmm. To say that I'm going to go out and get two is very lofty aspirations.
Light
right?
years, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I look at Okongwu. I mean, I don't know how much you're focusing on the draft, but I look at him and I think Bam is the comp people are making for him. I don't know if he's that guy. I don't know if he has those quicks. I mean, Bam really has seemed to completely, what's the word I'm looking for? Capitalize on all his potential. I know, yes. Kevin Pelton has some maximize. Term for that. Yeah, Pelton has some term for that when you really hit your ceiling. So
saturation or something like that.
Something. And then you got the Royal Jelly with the David Thorpe, and you got the who knows. But I don't know if he's going to reach that. But I look at a guy like Okongwu where he's not so coveted. And right now wings are the thing. But I'm looking at this and I'm going, the 4-5 hybrid guy, is that the guy teams should really be thirsting after? Because there are only so many of the wings, right? That you're only, it's really hard to get one of those wings. And additionally, it seems like those wings, they take a while to develop. You know, it seems like these 4-5 guys might be an easier role for whatever reason, if they are that guy, to grow into than it is to be a wing.
I don't know. It's easier. I think it requires a lot of things. First of all, it requires the guy has an innate basketball IQ. Like, we got to start there, right? I can't take any big and teach them to do what Bam does offensively, right? Mm-hmm. What he does offensively is that he came in with a high basketball IQ, and the skill part was needed some sharpening.
Yeah.
Right? So automatically, we're looking for really smart people, basketball smart. And, you know, that's not a remark about their other stuff, intelligence. I'm just saying, for the purpose of this discussion, looking for smart basketball players.
Right? I think Bam in college, you might not have even, I'm looking it up. He played 30 minutes a game, 0.8 assists a game. I mean, that guy,
right?
Who could have seen this coming?
Now, part of this is that opportunity, right? Because remember, we could say the same thing about his first 2 years in Miami, right? Oh, he only averaged da-da-da. Well, that's because they asked him to play like basically Hassan Whiteside light. Go out there, rebound, set screens, block shots, dunk when we give you the ball. And then you start to realize this guy has more to offer than the stuff that his physical gifts make readily available. It's the same thing that happens in biddy ball, right? When you're the 6'6" grader, they make you play center because it's so easy. You're taller than everybody else. You just grab the rebound and go back up with it, right? And instead of saying, wait a second, this kid has an acumen here that if we sharpen the other parts, he can be really good in this unique way, because it's not like there's a lot of these guys running around.
I guess I would be asking because, these guys don't grow on trees, but have we been trying to make these guys for a while? You know, we might have just started.
I don't think we've even like acknowledged that this guy should exist.
Yes.
Like again, Boris Diaw is Boris Diaw. He is basically this minus like he's not in shape. Right. And so Boris was great for us, and he was great for San Antonio, and they won our title in San Antonio, right? And went to the finals another time with him. But nobody was rushing out to go make another Boris. They're just like, oh, yeah, it's you know, kind of hard to guard him when he does all this stuff. And they're like, eh. We just kind of took it as a thing. And Draymond, I think, improved on what Boris was.
Yeah.
And became, instead of like another tricky part of them, the focal part of them. I know it blows people's mind. They say, yeah, I get it. Steph Curry's amazing. And Klay Thompson's amazing. But that offense does not work. Or that whole thing, because defensively he's amazing too. It doesn't work.
He's become underrated in retrospect. Just because he had such a fall off, people are acting like he's some sort of bum who was propped up by the city. I mean, that guy is good.
Do me a favor. Name a standard power forward, a traditional power forward somewhere in the league.
Oh.
It's not a trick question. Just give me a name of a good guy, not like a scrub. Good, but he's just as power forward gets.
This is breaking my brain of like, you know.
I'll give you one.
Like Marvin Williams just retired. Is he a wing? Is he a power forward?
No. He's too wingy. I'm not asking for bums. I'm asking for like a
15-year career, sir. But yeah, you were saying. Yeah.
LaMarcus Aldridge is power forward gets, right? I would go as far as say that if I brought to many NBA fans and indeed some quote unquote NBA experts and said, who would you rather have in his prime, LaMarcus Aldridge or Draymond Green? LaMarcus Aldridge.
That's insane.
You kidding me? That's not even close.
Oh my God. It just offends me.
The reality is you put LaMarcus Aldridge on the Warriors. They're not good. Not good the way they are with Draymond Green.
Yeah.
Because Draymond offensively possesses an IQ about playmaking. This is one of my favorite things about Draymond Green. Everything about him, loudmouth, trash talk, dirty fouls, right? Kicking people in the junk, all that stuff. It screams at someone who, technical fouls, screams at someone that if he had the ball, or like if he got upset the next time down, he's going to make a really dumb mistake. Either a bad shot or a pass that had no business going on. And instead, this dude has a remarkable ability to compartmentalize and go, I can be a complete jackass in this space and then give me the ball and I will make the right play every fucking time. Every time. It is uncanny, his IQ and his feel for the game. And then you add on to it and he guards five positions. Legitimately. Yeah.
I say he's the best defensive player of his particular generation, and people go, whoa. But, I mean, he broke the mold, man. It's not a crazy thing to say. And, again, I think some of what's happening is there's been a fall off. There's been a drop off. But you watch, I don't know, 2015 playoffs, 2016 playoffs. He is everywhere. It is completely insane. It is dominating. And I don't think that we've really seen it. You can make a comparison to Rodman, but that was a different era with less switching. Really incredible. And we're getting derailed here on this whole thing. Look, it's not easy to find another Draymond in the draft.
I say all that to say that Bam Adebayo exists because Draymond. And so the next wave of guys that are going to come up, I don't think they're going to be easily found, but there's going to be more concerted effort and development in that area after people have seen the success. Now it's happening multiple times in multiple different places with multiple different coaches. They're finding these guys who are able to do that stuff.
Now is the time to celebrate. Football is finally back, and DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, has millions of reasons why you should be excited. To kick off the football season, DraftKings is giving new users a free shot at a $1 million top prize with a total of $3 million up for grabs this Thursday. Getting in on Thursday night's single game showdown is easy. All you have to do is download DraftKings using the promo code MAYS. M-A-Y-S. Draft six players from the season opener. Stay under the salary cap and see how your team stacks up against the competition. So head to the app now to make it rain. Plus, new users who sign up today on DraftKings using the code MAYS will receive a free shot at a $1 million top prize with your first deposit. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game like having a shot at a $1 million payday. Download DraftKings app now and use code MAZE for a limited time. New users can get a free shot at the $1 million top prize and $3 million in total prizes. Don't miss this extra special week one bonus. Enter code MAZE to get a free shot at the $1 million top prize with your first deposit. That's code MAZE only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. We'll be back after this.
It's funny because people were looking for the next Draymond after he had such success as a second rounder, but they weren't talking about it in terms of a center. They were just talking about it in terms of an underrated wing size kind of dude, right? And now it's becoming the role. That's what maybe people are looking for. And Bam is that guy. And as I said, Okongwu, people say, oh, well, he's like Bam. You know, you like Bam, you'll like Okongwu. If I'm Okongwu's agent, that's what I'm saying. That's how I'm selling it. And I still think that there's still some value to be found here, because for whatever reason, maybe because it was so new and we're locked into these archetypes and we're locked into these positions, even when it was working and even when it was initially changing the league, it wasn't still what we were looking for. And I think what you're saying is right, that now with Bam, we have gone through a phase shift and it's now maybe what we are looking for. Still wings. Wings are king. You know, the championship runs through whoever has the best wings, it seems. But this is this other thing right now that if you're smart, if you know how to develop the right guys, it seems like you can have a hell of a player who wins you a series against the MVP.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of that MVP, did I detect a note of cynicism, Amin, about yes. what Giannis said? I was heartened for the Midwesterners out there when I saw it, saddened for the Warriors fans out there, because it seems to perhaps presage not the Warriors as an option. If he's not doing a trade, you know, it would be pretty goddamn hard for that to happen. So I took it at face value, naive sap that I am, Amin, and thought, well, he's not going to force a trade and you at least have another season. If you're a Bucks fan, am I wrong?
I just thought the question was the type of question we ask a freshman who gets knocked out in the first round of the tournament, a freshman phenom, and say, what do you think? And he just says, we're going to come back next year and we're going to win it all. And then 3 weeks later, he declares for the draft. It's just not fair to ask anyone any big picture life questions in the throes of defeat. He hasn't processed that stuff. And by the way, this isn't me saying Giannis is out of here. No question. I'm just saying any answer he gives in that moment is not really one of calculation, design, thought process. It is just an emotional reaction. He's a proud guy. He's the same guy that when asked how bad did the ankle hurt him, he's like, I'm not hurt at all. Like, buddy, like, we're not idiots. You limped your way up to this thing and you limped your way off. We know it's hurting you. It doesn't make you a tough guy to say it. But did we go back and respond? Good news, everybody. Giannis is 100% game four, he'll be perfect. No, we understood what happened. And what he says is not necessarily representative of what happened. The difference here is he doesn't have to make a decision for a long time. And for that reason, I say there's no reason to jump one way or another.
To be clear, I read it as not going to request a trade, and I would put the probability there, right? I do think that people tend to – it's a good sign. This goes back to the down payment conversation and the net rating. It's very analogous, whatever. It's comparable now that I'm free associating it, where – you know, to get in the game, if you're the Milwaukee Bucks fan, you need him saying stuff like this. If he's saying the opposite or not saying anything, you're probably screwed. Is it a guarantee? It's not a guarantee, but I at least would say it's a positive sign versus, oh, I don't know, Kevin Durant with the Warriors, where as much as there were fans who were mad at me for saying what I was saying, he wasn't helping them out at all. He wasn't saying anything like, oh, man, my teammates are great. Oh, man, I'd really like to consider the Warriors and sign back here. He just wasn't accepting any of the premise. So I at least would say it's a positive sign, even if he could redirect and even if he could change his mind.
Sure. I always say in this scenario, the athlete doesn't owe us
authenticity, and they don't owe us consistency. They're free to lie to us in that situation, and they're also free to change their mind in that situation from when they say it or not. And you're right, the way as an athlete to deflect and diffuse is very easy. I want to stay here. I'm not going anywhere. Yeah, you say that because you want the question to end, because if you don't say that, Kevin Durant, since you listen to everything, if you don't say that, then yes, we're going to talk about it for the entire time. And maybe in Giannis's case, we're still going to talk about it. But the idea is that you're not putting any more gas on that fire. You're letting it, hey, that's y'all over there. I didn't say anything like that. But the more you kind of give it a chance, the more oxygen you give it, the more it's going to be talked about. Now, as far as Giannis goes, I think there's a couple of things people got to keep in mind. A lot of times when superstars leave, it is due to the ineptitude of the organization they play for. You guys don't have your act together. How much more of my prime am I going to waste waiting for you to get your act together? Anthony Davis, shining example of this.
Yeah.
Poorly run team. Ownership didn't take it seriously. They're all focused on football. They're going through an ownership switch thing because the old man passed away. It's not on Anthony Davis to wait for y'all to get your shit together. So now we can get to winning. And so he said, I gave you a good 7 years of my life. All right, now I'm out. That's what happens most of the time. And that's what should happen. Because otherwise you end up like Kevin Garnett, who luckily got a ring, but, you know, doesn't always end up that way. Milwaukee's not that kind of organization. I think they have great ownership. I think John Horst is a smart guy. I think Bud's a good coach. Do they all have areas that they can improve on? Absolutely. Nobody's perfect out here. But the idea like, we'll never get it right here. Buddy, 2 years ago, you guys were the 8th seed. Right?
I don't know. See, now you were more Bucks negative. You were more Bucks negative, and now I'm more Bucks negative. I'm looking at the situation, and I could see them getting to the finals, but it just seems like they don't have enough.
What are they short of? What are they short on? What are they short on?
I think guys who can create their own shot, maybe a secondary, a secondary star, for instance.
Oh, okay. Okay, so let's start with guys who can create their own shot.
Mm-hmm.
Is that impossible to find? Is that impossible to acquire?
They don't have a tremendous amount of assets.
But those guys exist, though. Maybe it's not the best in the league at it, but somebody who's good enough? I need a reasonable facsimile. I don't always need an authentic. Sometimes they just need good, because Giannis is that good, right? This is what I would say. Yes, they need someone who can create their own shot. Yes, I think Giannis needs to, beyond improving his three-point shot, he desperately needs an in-between game. Floaters, runners, hook shots, right? Yes, Bud needs to switch up the play calling a little bit more. Get him on the catch. Get him off the ball. You know, having a better play creator, play initiator would help, obviously. But also not running, hey, give it to him at the top, and all right, let's watch it go. Like that. Mm-hmm. There's got to be more to it than that. And obviously, defensively, being more flexible with your stuff during the regular season, trying stuff out rather than holding on to secret defenses that will never work because you haven't practiced it all year in game situation, right? I would say Chris Middleton needs to, A, have a come-to-Jesus moment as far as looking in the mirror, and then from there, have a conversation with his coach and with his teammates about, I need to do more. I need to be utilized more, because you say they need a secondary star. Again,
he is talented.
Is he Anthony Davis? No, but he's fucking good as shit. He's a 20-plus points on 50-40-90 and a great defensive player. Like, most people would call that a super luxury to have. And so, like, oh, my God, why can't you be like, well, like what if they had Russell Westbrook, would that be better?
No.
Right? So to me,
I do love Chris Middleton. I do wonder what's missing, because I do love his game.
Part of it is him. Part of it is him, and part of it is them. They need to find a better way to use him, much in the same way that Draymond Green under Mark Jackson, part of it is him. His skill level wasn't high enough, I would say. And part of it was Mark Jackson. He didn't use them the right way. He used them like the Heat were using Bam 2 years ago. Beat up, back up big, go out there, be blue collar, hard nose, all right, sit back down. Right? If you use him a certain way, you can't be mad that he doesn't give you more. You put him in a position where this is all he can give you. We saw the last two games him be more aggressive. And by the way, Milwaukee look a lot better with Chris Middleton looking aggressive.
They won a game, and they lost a close one, right? So how do we get that Chris Middleton to appear when Giannis is still here?
Maybe it's Giannis taking on playing the five, and that being the main thing he does, and that opens things up.
Sure, but I guess my point is, there's a lot of things we can talk about Milwaukee that Milwaukee can do.
Well, if I'm being more negative, though, the Brogdon thing does set up a pretext if you do want to exit and you say you guys aren't serious. I mean, that would be something.
Absolutely.
I think in terms of PR, I don't think he gets hit in the way that KD gets hit because we underrate this aspect, but your fan base and how certain fan bases react inform the overall national reputation. Now, if you've got a very loud, committed fan base who is mad at you, they are going to change the conversation about you in the way that the Oklahoma City Thunder do, in the way that the Laker fan base did for Dwight Howard for years until he came back to the Lakers.
And I would say beyond the fan base, the ownership informs it.
Yeah.
Right? Like Oklahoma City creates an atmosphere of paranoia, us versus them. They all hate us, right? And so anyone who leaves here, you were never with us to begin with. Russell Westbrook went from
That'd be funny if that's what Presti was telling Donovan when he brought the beer cooler in.
he brought
the beer coolers that you were never with us in the first place. Get the fuck out.
Well, that's
your beer.
That would be funny, except for the fact that the Thunder wanted to keep him.
Yeah.
And Billy said thanks, but no thanks. But anyways.
Yeah.
The point being
is. But then you get the resentment. It still plays. Sorry. Continue.
The point being is that if the Thunder wanted to, they could have managed the Durant exit a lot classier.
Live sports are back. It's very possible that we may see an NBA playoff matchup between the Clippers and the Nuggets. Wait a minute. We are seeing a matchup between the Clippers and the Nuggets. And that is why our partners at Manscaped have partnered with us to make sure your Nuggets are as safe as possible when that matchup happens. But it's happening against the Clippers. Manscaped is here to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. The Lawnmower 3.0 is the best hygiene tool for the modern man. I used it this morning, honest to God. Because of their ceramic blade and skin-safe technology, your snags will be reduced. They actually just released their Shears 2.0 nail kit, which is perfect. A perfect add-on to their Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer. You gotta keep it fresh. The Shears 2.0 is a luxury four-piece nail kit featuring tempered stainless steel tools, and it includes slash tip tweezers, rounded point scissors, fingernail clippers, and a medium grit nail file. Their perfect package 3.0 comes with the new and improved lawn mower, waterproof, cordless, body trimmer, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag for you to use when we are done quarantining. The perfect package 3.0 also comes with the crop preserver and crop reviver. The crop preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant. The Crop Reviver is a spray-on toner. It's made with soothing aloe and witch hazel extracts. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC20 at manscaped.com. It's 20% off with free shipping, the code THEATHLETIC20 at manscaped.com. Take your grooming game to the next level.
Case in point, Toronto, rabid fan base, crazy, inferiority complex. Kawhi leaves, the first finals MVP in the history of the sport to leave immediately after winning finals MVP, to go to L.A. Like, it has all the makings of we should hate this guy. Oh, you want to be in the beach in Hollywood? All the makings. But
this is just like Gretzky.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Gretzky leaving, but the same thing. They managed it. They managed it by saying, thank you.
Did you stop yourself because you couldn't remember Edmonton? Is that why you stopped yourself?
Edmonton, the Oilers. Yeah, Oilers. it was a level of gratitude. They put it out front before anyone had a chance to react. Hey, we owe this dude gratitude. Thank you. Thank you for this. Thank you for allowing
you don't
us
think
to
if,
experience.
But if KD had won a championship, you don't think it would have been like that? Like, at least he gave us that?
It wouldn't, the vitriol wouldn't be as high as what happened, But no, I feel like the Thunder were always going to feel like kind of hurt.
Yeah.
And as a result, they weren't going to stop anybody from saying this ridiculous stuff. Same thing when LeBron left Cleveland. They should have rolled the red carpet the first time. They should have, thank you. There should have been billboards, thank you, LeBron. Instead, they let people come into the arena with filthy signs. Filthy signs. And lest you believe that, like, oh, how do you stop? They check the signs when you come in.
It was unbelievable what was there. And I think we have almost forgotten about it. But it was just around that time, the level of vitriol around LeBron, it's almost something that you can't even explain in the modern sports context, even if it was only a decade ago.
I feel like I can explain it with a certain general election, but that's neither here nor there. The point being is that
I'm just saying they had signs where they were talking about how his dad left him.
It's awful. Absolutely. That was my thing when Durant complained years ago about how the media was unfair. I'm like, bro, do you see what they say about LeBron? Do you see what they say about Carmelo Anthony? Who says that stuff about you? The worst thing they ever did was say they called him Mr. Unreliable, and he had a hissy fit. And the organization had a hissy fit. And as a result, the organization controls the local narrative of their fan base. It's the same reason why every Houston Rocket fan is whiny as hell. Why? Because their team is whiny. Their general manager writes memos. And the last thing I heard was because Anthony Davis got investigated for hitting somebody in the groin the other night. They're like, well, you know, I saw McMahon tweet out, the Rockets also wanted Chris Paul to be investigated for this to happen tonight. Oh, bro, like, just relax. Relax. Like, but if you, that's who you are, like having kids. They follow that lead. They follow those cues.
I agree with that. But to circle back, I think that there's also the element of how many fans do you have and how many are committed. And Anthony Davis didn't pay much of a price for coming to LA, in part because he's winning. As ugly as that process was, he's winning. But it's also because, let's face it, I'm sure there are Pelican fans out there, but not too many of them. Not too many committed Pelican fans. Whenever I was in New Orleans, you know, you tell the cabbie, tell the Uber driver, and I was there for the playoffs, that there's a playoff game tonight, and they go, oh, really? You know, they weren't going, oh, really, when it's the Saints. There was no, oh, really.
Obviously, the Saints have been there longer. The Saints are the original franchise. That's the thing that made them into a quote-unquote major league city from a sports perspective. The Saints literally own the Pelicans, not just in the figurative sense. Like, there's not – and I guess that goes to prove my point. The ownership thinks of it as an afterthought.
they're not going to be so mad. But I would argue that Giannis is – if he left Milwaukee, it would be more – like, even if they were better than the Pelicans, and even if you couldn't fault them as much as you could fault the Pelicans' ownership, it would be more like that in terms of reputational cost than it would be Kevin Durant leaving Oklahoma City.
I think, here's a question. If Kevin Durant had left Oklahoma City and gone to San Antonio, would the vitriol have been the same? San Antonio, great team.
No, it was the fancy Bay Area tech people, Warriors. I mean, I just heard a lot of it, and it's funny. It's funny living in the Bay Area too, and just the idea that people have of what life is like out here. And it's like 8 million. It's 8 million people riding around on Segways, talking about their startups.
The best way I could put it to you is, if Giannis goes to Golden State, you think there's not going to be vitriol of the, like, you think it's going to be like Anthony Davis?
It's a very good point. But if he goes to the Raptors, nobody's mad, but also nobody also cares that much.
If he goes to the Raptors, if he goes to Dallas, I think people kind of like to get over it real quick. If he goes to Golden State or goes to Miami, right? Because there are two organizations that now have the reputation,
the Miami one is bad now because they almost hurt themselves by kicking his ass. Yeah, then that's like Kevin Durant. That fits right into the Kevin Durant model of they beat you and you join them. We respect you less. And also we respect you less because it's, like you said, it's the I'm trying to even come up with the villain in a movie or the person you hate, but that's it. We need to come up with resentment tier. The resentment tier of the NBA is Lakers, Warriors, Heat. And I'm not sure there's anybody else right now
who's in the resentment class. Nobody
comes close. The triangle of resentment, the triangle of jealousy. Yeah.
Nobody comes close. And part of it is like, because it takes a lot. It takes success, right? Success in terms of banners. It takes success in terms of stealing people's free agents and players, right? They have to have done it multiple times. And it also takes a little bit of, like you said, a naivete about geography. So there are people who think the Heat play on the beach. Take my town, South Beach. They actually play in Miami. It faces Biscayne Bay, but that's not really a beach. It's just kind of a marina and a bunch of boats docked in there. San Francisco. Everyone's like, oh my God, it's this shiny. And no, it's actually piss and shit everywhere on the streets. And it's actually a pretty nasty town.
It's gotten pretty bad recently. Yeah.
Cardboard box costs $17 million, right? And then L.A., everyone thinks Hollywood and you know, Jack Nicholson and Denzel at the game. And then he's like, have you ever seen the upper deck at Staples Center? It's a very different experience. It's not Hollywood elites upstairs. So it requires all that. It's like places you wish you could live, plus teams that seem to get all the good girl, all the hot girls or whatever, plus championships.
Yeah, and the Warriors were a new entry to it. I'm trying to think back in the day, were the Lakers the only one? Was anybody else flanking them for a while? I feel like the jealousy tier.
Not really like Celtics, but you know, I think part of that was more carried by obviously the history. Celtics, yeah, because they had a history of success and then they had a history of getting guys, right? They got guys on all these shady deals and stuff, right? Like Bill Russell for a washing machine and, Parrish and McHale for a pair of tube socks. And, you know, they had that going for them. And it's like over and over again. They had a dynasty in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. And like it never stops. And they get everything. You know, what do we have, right?
But LeBron branded South Beach as that. I don't think Miami was viewed that way.
It did in the sense that Alonzo Mourning, Juwan Howard, who ultimately got voided, and Alonzo Mourning was like the nascent of that.
I feel like LeBron almost branded it because he said South Beach. I'm taking my talents to South Beach. And that I don't think much of America spends a lot of time thinking about Miami or thinking about Florida, but it almost communicated, oh my God, this guy has left hardscrabble Cleveland. Oh my God, he's going there because they have the good looking women and the beach and everything else. And that informed the whole thing.
I would say this, like, Zoe and Juwan Howard were in select theaters, and then like the wide release was LeBron.
Yeah,
because Shaq also was another one. Like Shaq famously said, "I have a list of places; they're all warm weather cities, like Dallas and like Miami, and I can't remember what the third city was." Mm-hmm. So, like the idea is they'd been building towards it, but it was kind of like indie art house stuff, and then this was their. Like maybe Shaq and Zoe and Juwan Howard were like Memento and what's the Midnight One or whatever.
I've got some questions about how the guy in Memento came up with this system that he adheres to deal with not having
Christopher Nolan. My guy Guy Pierce. Oh
yeah, if you couldn't remember anything, if you had anterograde amnesia or whatever it's called, then how could you come up with a system for dealing with it?
Because someone told him.
Well, you gotta get this tattoo. Remember. You gotta get this tattoo right now. You gotta do it right now.
Write down everything. No, someone told him like write down everything. That was one of his last memories. Was I think is whatever.
It's still, somebody told him. It seems a little implausible, but yes, and I think with the Warriors to extend this on because it's funny how we've added jealousy tier teams, but we haven't really subtracted them. The Warriors had this crazy situation of getting good during the economic rise of the Bay Area. It was concurrent. You know, the rise of San Francisco almost eclipsing maybe LA in terms of culture and the cultural relevance because of the social media companies. Yeah. That happens and it coincides with the Warriors getting great and then stealing Kevin Durant from OKC, thus branding them as a jealousy tier team, one of the three.
Perfect storm. It was a perfect storm that brought them to this place.
And it remains to be seen whether they remain in jealousy tier. Like, if they go back to being bad and then they get good again 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. Like, will they jump right back
the
in?
The Lakers have a lifetime jealousy tier pass. Yes. And maybe you add, maybe the Clippers could theoretically become it. Maybe they
have to build. It's built on literally decades of success, right? The idea is that the Lakers could be terrible for 7 years in a row. Maybe longer than that. I'm giving them the last couple of years of playoff appearances after 2010. They weren't that good either, 11, 12, or 13. But 7 years at least of being trash and nobody wants to play there, and all of a sudden, it's back. Instantly. The moment they're good, it's back. It's because they built this long resume. 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, right?
It's a brand. It's cachet. It's Coca-Cola. Yep. It's Harvard, right? It's just one of these big American brands. It's the Dallas Cowboys. It's not hard. It's just not easy to lose that. Look how hard the Dallas Cowboys have worked to try to lose their brand and lose their cachet. They still can't lose it. You know, we have these enduring, iconic American brands. The Lakers are that. Now, I think Steve Ballmer is submitting his application to join the jealousy tier. He's being turned away. He's being turned away for a while. But he's submitting
look.
It.
Let me tell you something. If there's a way to buy your way into this, it looks like Ballmer's the guy who's going to do it. They just okayed, by the way, the arena. I got the email. If I want to put down a deposit for season tickets, opening night 2024-2025 for their Inglewood Arena. If you're not
the design on that arena looks good too. By the way,
yeah, I mean, look, they spare no expense. If you're wondering what we're talking about, the Clippers, Steve Ballmer wanted his own arena because they're a third class citizen at Staples Center. They might be behind Disney on Ice, also, by the way. So he wants their own arena so they can control the revenue streams and control sponsorships and stuff like that. Wanted to build it in Inglewood because right next to the new Rams Chargers Stadium, because that's like a nice little complex there. There's a plot of land. And it was across the street from the old Forum, which was owned by Jim Dolan, he of Madison Square Garden fame. They had taken the Forum and renovated it to be a world-class concert venue. And the reality is a lot of great concerts come through there. And so Dolan and MSG were rightfully concerned that if you build a brand new spanking arena right across the street, the acts are all going to want to play there, not in the old Forum. So he basically tied up in litigation and lawsuits and zoning permits and all types of stuff, right? And you know, channeling money to local politics and stuff to basically cock block this new arena any which way they can. And so what Steve Ballmer did, rather than say, I'm going to pay for my lawyers and we're going to fight for this garden, he just said, how much? And Dolan said, how much for what? He said, how much for the Forum?
Mm-hmm.
And Dolan named the number, and Steve Ballmer like went far above and beyond by several factors of what that thing was worth. Bought it not because he's going to make that his arena, not because he needs that area for a parking lot. He bought it just so you could go away, Jim Dolan. Be gone. Stop bothering me, little fly, so I can do what I want to do. That is money upon money upon. When you make other billionaires act like broke boys, that's money. Ethan, I think I've told you this before. Steve Ballmer, richest owner in the NBA. If you add up the next 15 NBA owners, they still net worth less than Steve Ballmer by himself.
Yeah, that guy's got money. He's not hurting because of the new economy. And he might be able to feast on certain teams and situations that might be hurting. What would you do with that site, by the way, if you were Ballmer? What would you do with the Great Western Forum? I feel like I would turn it into a museum for a 1980s Lakers basketball. I would have a wax sculpture of Jack Nicholson doing blow in that little secret room they have. Not that he ever did that. I mean, it's a fantastical thing I'm imagining. Not that anything like that ever happened, allegedly. But I feel like I would turn it into a museum for the Lakers if I had Steve Ballmer money.
I would. Yeah. I would lease it to the Lakers as a museum. That would be hilarious. That would be the easy E line. Dre Day only made easy payday, right? Like the idea that like, yo, yeah. Everyone's like, ooh, they did this and that. Yeah. Guess who's getting a check for that?
I feel you could turn it into a museum. I don't know what you do with it. Does he just demolish it? Like, what is, I mean, this is a question I now want answered, is what does Steve Ballmer do with this massive arena in one of our major cities that he has no need for, apparently, and only bought so he could build the newer one that he wants?
Two words for you. Or actually three words. Four words. Season three, Righteous Gemstones.
Yes. Wait, when's it coming back, by the way? When's all our favorite shows coming back?
See, it's coming back this fall at some point. I talked to Tim Baltz, who plays BJ on Righteous Gemstones. He's a frequent guest on our radio show on SiriusXM NBA Radio. He said they filmed some and then they had to stop because of COVID. But I believe they're going back to filming soon. They do it in South Carolina, so obviously it's a little cheaper. They have a Christmas episode, a Christmas special in the can. So at the very least, we're going to get that, I believe.
That's awesome. I need Barry to come back. I think they were held up because of COVID. Obviously, it presents a challenge. So my wife is a huge General Hospital fan, and it's funny to see some of these lower rent shows just power through regardless.
Oh, did you see the mannequin? They did a kiss scene with a mannequin. Have you seen that one?
I didn't see that. I did. I've been walking in the room and seeing they just do a bunch of phone calls. That's how they deal with it. The soap opera characters are just – they're doing a bunch of phone calls with one another. And
so they had a conversation. They had one. I watched the clip. It's like two people having a conversation, a man and a woman. And everything is a very tight shot on the man, a very tight shot on the woman. And just kind of like a blurred shoulder in the foreground. You don't really know if that's them or not. And then – they went in for the kiss, and the guy is like caressing, and it's so clearly a mannequin.
It was so bad. Oh my God. That's ridiculous.
But it works because that's the production quality on those.
Well, it's amazing what they'll stick with. I mean, I would like to know from Stephen A. Smith, who's a huge General Hospital fan, to the point of having a role on the show that he does for free. Which is just an amazing factoid that he just does it as a labor of love. Stephen A. Smith, despite having a million jobs at ESPN, will walk down to the lot and just work as an actor on General Hospital because he is such a GH fan. But it's funny. I look and A, the characters are not made up properly because they have to just do it themselves. And especially the male characters
look
like shit.
Because they don't have makeup anymore.
Yeah. So they don't know how to do it. And Allie kind of likes it. She kind of likes seeing that these characters – this is like the sickness of fandom right here. And with athletes, you know, do the fans really love you? Or is it something else? Allie has a sick little thrill of seeing these actors look bad.
Nice. So Allie is basically the internet.
Apparently. It's like, oh, yeah, you're not so fancy. Oh, okay. You're not on this echelon above us. You're not so – oh, okay. Oh, look at those crow's feet. That's what's going on right now
By the way, I regret there was a Reddit thread that I was reading earlier today that I wanted to bring up, and I completely forgot. And now it's the end of the show. I don't think we have enough time to do it justice, but it's the title is Everyone Likes to Talk About How Smart Their Kid Is, How Dumb Is Yours? And some of these stories are amazing.
My kid's a dumb jock. I will brag about what an athlete he is, but yeah, he is. I have him try to count, and he just always goes 1, 2, 4. Just fuck 3. Just skips it. So that's my submission. That's the show. I don't really think my kid is a dumb jock. I'm holding out hope. You know, maybe I'll just go with jock. It sounds wrong, and now I'm worried about that being on a podcast. But I will continue. I will power through. Thank you to the listeners. Thank you to super producer Jade, who is doing an excellent job throughout this postseason. And, of course, thank you to one of our favorite guests. Ah, he gets the compliments, Amin El Hassan. Anything to plug on the way out? Anything at all?
Yes, absolutely, yes. So my podcast, Black Opinions Matter, BOMM, we talk about a lot of great cultural things and a lot of fun stories. Like, for instance, what was a life event, a life-changing event for you that changed your outlook? We had one of my co-hosts talk about his decision to go vegan. I talked about my decision to basically stop drinking. A lot of great stories that everyone can relate to and really fun. Also, the podcast Cinephobe, that is the podcast that Zach Harper and I review the movies that you claim to hate. or that you hate to love, or you love to hate. I don't know which one is which. We watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and decide whether they are deserving of that or not deserving of that. This week, we did one of my legitimate all-time favorite movies, The Breakup, starring Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn. Ah. So check that out, Cinephobe, wherever you get podcasts.
Yeah, a movie that was interesting because they went for something that people don't necessarily want from such movies. Thanks to all of you. Stay safe. Enjoy the playoffs. We will be back next week. See ya.
He said see ya a couple of times there.
See ya. Include that part, Jen. Multiple see ya.
Fine.